Bill Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
So there was a rush to judgment on the Dr. Laura thing.
I didn't, Phil, what I said was, I didn't say it wasn't sad.
Then what are you saying?
I said there is a rush to judgment on Laura and her mother dying. We are in a time and in a place in our society where we are trying to find death with dignity.
And you think that was provided in the case of this older woman, Laura Schlesinger's mother, who was found dead after several months, possibly murdered?
I think there is a rush to judgment, if I could be allowed to finish.
I'm sorry, I'm hearing you say something.
No, I have personal experience in this.
I know that your mother died in similar circumstances. I understand that your father has passed on. I'm just saying, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I'm just saying that I don't know how it ties in.
Can I explain?
Go ahead.
Death with dignity, Phil, means that you die without people hovering over you, without a doctor hovering over you, without feeding tubes coming out of you, without blood being pumped into you, without family and friends sobbing and crying over you. It means you die when and how you want to. Now, in the case of my own mother, she didn't, after we saw my father die of a heart attack over a period of 3 days, I knew she wanted a dignified death. And she died, Phil, the way she wanted to die. She was alone in our home. She fell down some stairs. She broke her neck. And they found her 3 months later. Her body had decomposed. It took dental records to identify her. There's a dignity in that. There is a...
What is dignified about needing dental records to identify...
Phil, the dignity is that you're not a bother to anyone. You didn't ask anybody to...
Well, did she commit suicide?
My God, no. Absolutely not.
Well, so she didn't exactly choose the time or the place.
Well, she knew that she was going to die someday. And so she removed herself from her family, went into her home, and it just so happened they found her body, yes.
4 days or...
4 months.
4 months after she died.
Yes. And Phil, I'll tell you something. Don't focus in on the myopia of the violence of the death. The important thing to remember about Dr. Laura's mother or my mother is that they were not a burden to their children, that they died in a very dignified way.
Being murdered.
Well, they were not being hovered over in a hot cell. You know, the myopia that you're expressing here...
No, how's that dignified? You're getting murdered or you're falling downstairs. And it's dignified to be in a state of such decomposition, they have to identify you with dental records.
What would you rather have? I'll ask you to choose. Would you rather that they find your skeletal carcass that needs to be identified with dental records, or would you rather family and friends and doctors hovering over you, bawling their eyes out, using up valuable medical resources on an old man who's going to die someday anyway? I think it is the height of selfishness. It is the absolute, absolute height of selfishness to lay there with a tube coming out of your nose and saying, oh, could you give me a Kleenex? Oh.
Well, don't make a joke out of it, all right?
Well, I'm not making a joke, Phil. That's exactly what it is. I saw my father go through it.
We're talking to Margaret Gray. She is going to be writing. Is this your column tomorrow?
This is my column tomorrow morning.
She's a nationally syndicated newspaper column. She's going to be writing about death with dignity. Your mother, what was your mother's name?
My mother was Harriet Bonham.
And your family's from Pennsylvania?
We were from the eastern Pennsylvania area, Delaware Valley, yeah.
And your father died from a heart condition, and he passed away very slowly.
That is correct.
And your mother was so stricken with that, she didn't want to be a burden to anybody, so she went off and lived alone and died after falling down some stairs.
As she wanted to, yes.
Did your mother express a desire to commit suicide?
It was not a suicide, Phil. You don't understand. She went off, lived alone, and decided that she was going to die in that house.
Did she go anywhere?
I don't know.
Did you call her? I mean, how could a woman be dead for 4 months and you not know it?
I left message after message. I assumed she was angry at me for something. Believe me, I tried to get through, as I'm sure Laura Schlesinger did with her mother. But the thing to remember about Laura's mother and mine is they died in a very dignified way, in a way that was not burdensome to their family, in a way that was not a trouble to the medical institutions or professions, in a way that did not overburden our police, they were murdered or they fell out of windows or whatever happened. They laid there. My understanding is that the way they found Laura's mother is a bird stopped singing.
Yes.
Otherwise, do you see how wonderful that is? She wasn't a bother to anyone.
What about your mother? How did they find her?
I don't know. I think that there was a statement by the police that they thought a skunk had died and they had gone under the house.
Oh, God.
Phil, I'm saying to you, I'm sorry that my mother died, but I'm glad it wasn't an imposition on anyone.
So there was the smell?
My understanding, yes.
Dental records.
You know, Phil, if you want to make a joke out of this...
I'm not making a joke out of this. I'm not making a joke at all. I'm saying that the... 1-800-449...
You're saying what?
Let me give it a number. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Many of the elderly, as you know, think about and have dealt with the philosophy of death with dignity. Some people want to choose the time and the place that they die. In the opinion here of my guest, Margaret Gray, who is a syndicated newspaper columnist, Laura Schlesinger's mother and her mother, your mother, Helen Bonham, or Harriet...
Harriet Bonham.
Just went off and died a dignified death where their bodies just lay and rotted for 4 months.
Wouldn't you rather be found that way?
I don't know if I want to be found with my rotting body laying out someplace, no.
So you want to sit there and have everybody cry over you?
I understand what you're saying. I understand. I know I do not want to be an imposition.
And it is the height of selfishness to lay there in a hospital bed and have everyone weep big fat crocodile tears when you could be laying at the bottom of some stairs, laying in your kitchen, or decomposing on a bathroom floor, and nobody is being troubled or put out. That's what our elderly can do for us. And I say my hat is off to my mother and Laura's mother.
I don't want to be a burden to anybody when I die. They say that when you know, if you get that far in life and you can even just take a crap normally, you're doing better than most people.
Well, Phil, look, the decent thing for these older women to do is to follow in the footsteps of Laura's mother and my mother. Just die and don't be a bother. That way, you don't make your family angry. No one's fighting over the medical bills. No one's saying, how do we take care of her? Sit in a chair and just die. And they will find the TV on and you staring at it. Well, not staring at it, but...
That almost sounds like a joke.
No, it is... the perfect way for a person to leave this earth.
Okay, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686 here in this week before this transitional week here in the year 2002 to 2003. Margaret Gray is my guest. We're talking about death with dignity. And an old lady being found 4 months after she dies may sound like a horrible thing. But if you stop to think about the fact that she wasn't a bother to anybody, she didn't cost anybody any money medically, she wasn't having family and friends fawning over her, maybe it's the ultimate unselfish act. That is to die and just decompose. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Why did you not call? I'm talking to Margaret Gray, who's with Vaspo Syndication, and it's her newspaper column that's nationally syndicated to 150 newspapers. Your mother died in much the same way Dr. Laura Schlesinger's mother died. Is that correct?
No, that is not correct. My mother was not murdered.
All right, but your mother died, and she was in the house rotting for 4 months, as you put it.
You know, Phil, I didn't say rotting. I said she was respectfully and with dignity decomposing.
All right, I'm going to have to ask you what you mean by dignity with decomposing with dignity, but I want to know, why were you not talking to your mother in those 4 months? How is it you didn't know that...
Excuse me, I'm not going to be interrogated here.
I'm not interrogating you.
Well, you sound like a cop, and you're not going to yell at me. Now, you're going to ask me these questions with respect.
I'm sorry. How is it that you did not speak to your mother in 4 months?
Phil, my mother died at the age of 76, we didn't have anything else to talk about. We had nothing more to talk about.
Were you angry at her?
No.
Was she angry at you?
No, you're missing my point. We've talked about everything. When you're 76 years old, you run out of things to talk about. We simply had nothing else to talk about. I would call her up and I'd say, "Hello, Mom, it's Margaret." She'd say, "Hello, dear." There'd be silence for 10 seconds, and I'd say, "Well, I can't think of anything." And she'd say, "Neither can I," and that would be it. Hello?
I'm here. You mean you just...
There wasn't anything else to talk about. So one day, I'm sure she was going downstairs. It's where she kept a lot of the preserves that she enjoyed. I'm sure she tripped over something, fell, broke her neck. The coroner said that the neck was broken in four places. And that the head, and this is the part that just, this does really worry me. Her head was twisted completely around. It was staring backwards.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that weird? That's out of the, just like out of the movie The Exorcist.
And they don't suspect foul play?
No, no. They said it was absolutely a million to one shot, but the way she fell, her head twisted all the way around. In fact, one of the police officers said, "Look, she's got two left feet," because he didn't understand the head and the feet were wrong. And then they realized.
Oh, Margaret, that it's a story. It's ghoulish. It's just ghoulish.
It is, Phil, but understand, it's all right. There's no better way to die than to be found. To die and to be found a long time afterward is the most respectful way you can go and not be a burden on your children who have their own lives and their own joys to entertain.
1-800-449-8686, the number here on The Phil Hendry Show with Margaret Gray. Tracy, go ahead. You're on The Phil Hendry Show with Margaret Gray.
Yes, I just would like to know why you assume that your parents are a burden to you. I think that your parents brought you into this world, they took care of you all of your life and helped you, and now you're saying it's a burden and that's the dignity, the way to die.
I don't think you have a clue. I think, Tracy, when you reach that point in your life, you should be able to take care of yourself. You should have earned enough money, saved enough money, and not expect your children to be the ones to support you. Now,
Why would that be a burden?
Well, wait a minute. I wasn't supporting my mother. Now, having said that, my mother was self-sufficient. But I am saying that when they get sick, then there's that whole hospital. Have you ever had to go see a relative in the hospital? Hello?
I have a very big family, and I have seen it. And
all right.
It's
standing over and waiting for them to die. That's all you're doing.
You're getting to know who your family members are. You're getting there. You're being by them side.
I know
you're
who
helping
they are.
Them.
I don't have to stand around and make small talk about when the corn's coming in while my
How well did you know your mother, that your mother was there for 4 months and you didn't even know what was going on?
I talked to her every day.
And you said you guys didn't have anything to talk about.
No.
So, okay, but they didn't know. If you talked to her every day, how did you not know she was deceased for four months?
Phil, I said to Phil earlier, I said I left messages for her. I thought she was angry at me.
And you didn't go over there to find out what's going on, considering the circumstances of her age?
She lives in Pennsylvania. I live in California.
Well, you have no relatives near her.
Are there any relatives?
No.
Well, you could get on an airplane.
To do what?
To fly over there.
I'm sorry, if that was my mother, I would be there in a heartbeat. And I would take care of my mother until the day she dies.
What
anything
are you going
happen.
To do? Oh, so in other words, you're going to embarrass her and watch her while she loses control of her bowels.
That's not embarrassing. It's a part of life, and you need to realize that.
Oh, it's not, really? So you won't mind losing your bowels in front of your kids? Oh, great.
If it happens, it happens.
Oh.
Love is there. Your heart should be big enough to see that and look past that.
I tell you what, Tracy, do this for me. When you lose control of your bowels and you flood a toilet pan, then look at your kids and say, "It's love."
You know what?
Wait a second. You're misrepresenting what...
No, that's exactly what Tracy wants to do. She wants to...
No, I'm saying that my parents are not a burden to me. And any parent shouldn't be a burden to you or anybody else. That's ridiculous that you would say something like that.
My mother died in a very dignified way. I was not interrupted. I was having a lunch meeting over at Fox. Do you realize that the...
So, okay, let me ask you something. So when you get to be your mother's age, do you want to be alone?
Wait a minute. What was the gift?
My mother, well, they found my mother when I was in the middle of a lunch meeting at Fox.
So the gift is what?
That they're not calling me up and saying, oh, God, your mother's dead.
Oh, my God, get real, lady.
You know something? I can guarantee you, Tracy, you would have rather seen one of your relatives lying on the bottom of a swimming pool
than going
week after week to a urine-scented sanatorium with drool buckets and cream corn.
I've been there,
Thank you.
And I would do it over and over and over again.
I agree with you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Tracy, for your call. Really?
Yes.
I'd rather just come home and see one of my relatives lying at the bottom of a swimming pool, then head on over to the cream corn festival at the sanatorium.
Yes. Now do you understand? Now do you see? And I think that woman, oh my God.
Well, we have a rule on the Phil Henry Show. We don't like to talk about people after they've hung up.
Well, I'm going to break your rule.
Well, I would rather you not.
I'm going to. That woman said, oh yeah, Phil, I'll just sit there in a chair. I'll let it all go into a bedpan, and then I'll say, do you love me? Sure.
Well, I can understand how you'd feel that way.
You better believe it.
Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. We're talking to Margaret Gray about the death of Dr. Laura Schlesinger's mother and how your own mother went in similar circumstances. Well, your mother wasn't murdered. She fell down some stairs.
She fell down the stairs to the basement.
And you also say that when they found her, her head was twisted completely around.
Yes, and I know that there was the comparisons were made with the exorcist and all of that. No, none of that happened. It was a freak accident. She was 76 years of age. The police say that she fell, hit two banisters, went back and forth basically between the banisters, catapulted over one of the banisters apparently, and went head first into a box, so that when she went into the box, the body fell over and snapped the neck into three places.
Oh, my God.
Well, but, Phil, this was a long time ago.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean,
You would fill a bedpan, hold it out with arms stretched, and say, have a bucket of love, wouldn't you?
No, I would not. I'm simply saying that that's a horrific way for someone to die.
Absolutely. But, Phil, I'm not going to fill up a bedpan and say, here, have a drink from the lovin' cup.
Okay. The woman was saying that she would hope...
She wants her kids to change her diapers.
No, she was saying that she would hope that there would always be unconditional love in her life, no matter what. Margaret Gray, my guest, a syndicated newspaper columnist. So, to be found after 4 months so that they have to identify you through dental records, you've given your family a great gift, according to my guest, Dr. Margaret Gray. You've given them the gift of death with dignity. You don't have to stand over a bed. You don't have to empty bedpans. You don't have to watch them feeding you through a tube. You just simply get a phone call one day. We found your mother or your brother or your husband in a closet. We think it's them anyway. We'll have to get the dental records. What do you think? That's our question of the day here on The Phil Henry Show, our moral dilemma, at 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Real capper on my life, you know. Dental records explained, it's Phil Henry, sometime erstwhile talk show host, now a bush pilot in New Guinea. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686, making pot brownies.
By the way, a copy of Margaret Gray's book, Decompose with Dignity, is available at...
All Barnes & Noble, Phil.
Yes, all right. I can see it right here. It's available at Barnes & Noble. And is also...
It's also available online or Amazon.
It's also available at Amazon.com. Get her out of here. Decompose with dignity. 1-800-449-8686. Now, did you see that frog on TV pitching that cloning thing? Wow. Get a load of her, huh? I say frog with all due respect, but wouldn't you sort of expect the French to lay one of those on us?
With all of the people who are dying from the bombs and everything, I think it's time that we clone the child and make the child...
Oh, get out of here. How much are you getting for them babies? Do you think it's a real one? Here's the thing about clones. They're so way, way out there that I could have my kids believing they're extraterrestrial. Tomorrow morning... Oh, no, the kids are not around this week. Well, when they come home for school next week, I'm going to tell them that that cloned baby, it has ESP or something. Can see the future as X-ray vision. It's space-age stuff, isn't it? New clone babies are coming in, and this new one, this Eve, do you think it's real? Do you think it's a real clone? There was that woman who got on TV and talked about it today. I don't ordinarily comment on someone's looks, but when they're French and they're talking about clones, I think I'll make an exception at this time. What a frightening-looking thing she was. I bet you she thinks she's hot. And then when she opened her mouth and it was all of this and that and this French... Oh, here we go. Now we're going to start getting it from them on why it is. How come you're bombing people? Well, why can't we make people? Well... Who says you can't make people? I mean, you can make them if you want. Isn't the problem with clones that they're going to come out bad? You know, and you see, in other words, if you make a clone, it may turn out bad. Like have the wrong leg or something, one leg, two left feet. I don't know. The problem with that woman, she can clone a human, but she couldn't. There's something about brushing her teeth that she didn't quite get. Do you know what a clone is? It's a thing that you make. It's another person that you can make out of a cell of your own. And now they say that they got they cloned one. So bring them on over. Bring all comers. We don't care. The clones, the centaurs, the mermaids, all the freaks. This is the century of the freaks. I really got tight when I saw that. Is she French Canadian or is she just strictly French, or is there a difference? I don't know. But the thing that I did hear today that tightened my jaws a tad was that five terrorists got into our country, suspected terrorists, over the border of Canada. Now, I mentioned that to my fine friend Janice Ngero, who is Canadian, and she said, so what? They have to get by American immigration, you idiot. It isn't our fault that they got into your country. And I sat there feeling sheepish for about 30 seconds and then realized, but they had to get into Canada in the first place. And then she sort of went, brr, 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 I got to go get a drink of water, and she left the room. Hey, Canada, while you're writing columns about how we're supposed to live down here and how we're sort of pushing our weight around and all of these things, would you mind not having any terrorists sneak into our country? That'll make batch number two, by my counting. The first one did a little bit of damage, so if you wouldn't mind, it'd be just as a small favor to me. Maybe double-check some of them guys that are coming in on your end. And now we got one of them French frogs coming down from Quebec telling us all about how they're cloning them babies, and she's going to ship one south soon. Then you'll see. It's one of the children of the damned with those eyeballs that float. It's going to stare like that George Sanders character and just blow up the building, blow up the schoolhouse.
We are going to leave now. We're going out. We're going to spread our seed.
Why is it with America building all of those bombs and all of that stuff that can kill people, why can't we create life? You know, you can create any life you want so long as there ain't more French Canadians. How about that? Let's make a deal. You can clone as many people as you want as long as they ain't French. Huh? Deal? Let's shake on it. All right. That's all I ask. That's all I'm asking. All right, what else did I get for Christmas? The Honeymooners on CD. Thanks to my kids for that. Very nice green shirt, thanks to my wife for that. And that's it. Moving along, That's exactly all I got for Christmas. And you want to know something? I could care less, because the joy is in the giving. The joy is in the giving, and then the joy is in the crying when they realize they didn't get everything that they wanted. The joy is in the bawling and the crying, and then the eventual timeout that we had to give our daughter, because she's shifting now from little girlhood into womanhood, and she doesn't know what the hell she is anymore. The Barbie doll ain't quite making it. The electric scooter doesn't quite do it for her. There's a world that she wants that isn't quite there yet. She kind of likes toys, but she also wants to be a young lady. She sort of likes dolls, but she also wants a car. She's only 11, but she feels 15. You know what I'm saying? And so she went through this meltdown on Christmas Day, and I could hear Maria.
And another thing, you get in the room and you shut your mouth. You're going to end up in bed. That's right, I told you about it.
She doesn't know if she wants toys or boys. But next Christmas, I'm sure everything will be a lot easier. We went through the same thing with the guys, only the guys are not as tough. People say that guys are a lot easier than girls. They're right. The guys went through that transition, and they sort of, you know, they realized that, like my youngest son said to me, you realize, of course, that he says to me, I want to tell you something.
What?
Well, I don't want to embarrass you.
Well, go ahead. He's 13, right?
Well, what is it? Well, you realize I don't believe in Santa Claus anymore, don't you?
Really? What do you mean you don't believe in Santa?
Oh, come on. Will you stop?
No, what do you mean you don't believe in Santa Claus?
I know there's no Santa Claus.
No, he's going to come to, yeah, to the North Pole. How did you find out?
I used deduction. There's no fat man with reindeers or anything. I said, I told you he flies around in a helicopter.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So those guys were easy to transition out of. But the girl, and I got her an electric scooter, 7 miles an hour, charged the thing for 17 hours. They put it together at Toys R Us, which there was almost a fist fight in Toys R Us when I picked that up. But then everything cooled out. The guy comes back, because I paid him $20 to assemble the scooter. And the guy comes, and I get up there. It's Christmas Eve. I got to charge this thing. I need 17 hours to charge it. I give the guy my little ticket, and he goes in the back, and he comes out with a floor model. It looks like 16 people have been riding it. You know, it looks like that, like an elephant got on the thing. I said, this doesn't look like my scooter.
That's the only one back there, sir.
Go back and get it. Go back and get my scooter.
Is your name Mr. Henry?
Yeah.
This is the only one. No.
I bought a brand new scooter.
Can you show me where you bought it from?
Yeah, right over there where it says scooters, right there. I got the box down off the thing. I gave the thing to the guy. It's brand new.
Well, okay, I'll look, but we're kind of understaffed today.
And that's another thing. How is it if you're a toy store, you're understaffed at Christmas? Gee, I didn't know we'd have a rush this year. Yeah, you know what? You're right. It's only a toy store. How could you figure you'd have a rush at Christmas time? Well, okay, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, we're really busy. No. You're busy? You sell toys. Why would you be busy at Christmas? I don't get it. I don't know. It kind of always overwhelms me a little bit. Well, okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I got a scooter that I bought here. So then finally the kid found it and rolled it out. And, you know, everything was cool. And I took it up into my office and... Yeah, I drove it home. Yeah, right, Craig. I got on it. My big, fat slob Phil got on this thing. Well, it only goes 7 miles an hour. And like so many of those battery-powered toys, you charge it for 12 years, and you get 4 minutes worth of use. You know, you're charging, and you're charging, and you're charging. And finally, 12 hours later, get the thing. Boom, boom. Right there. Christmas morning. Catherine sees it. Fantastic. She rode it for probably a half hour and comes back and goes, it's going slow. Got to charge it another 12 hours. So she had the big-time meltdown, man, and you know, I forget it. I don't even want to talk about her. She's a girl. Okay. That was cool. We had a great Christmas. I've had nothing but good Christmases since I've been married, because I had a lot of bad Christmases growing up as a kid, naturally, when you come from the ghetto like I do, and some decent ones as a young adult. I remember one Christmas Eve I spent knocking back scotches at the ABC Liquor Lounge in Orlando, Florida, with my friend Roy Karras, a erstwhile Vietnam veteran. And now, I don't know where he is. I think he's dead. And we sat there popping back the 45-cent drinks. That was one Christmas Eve. But when I got married, everything really kind of turned out good because, well, my parents were cruel to me. They beat me and starved me. But I learned how to shoplift, and here I am. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Remember, decompose with dignity. That's our watchword this week on The Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Out of bounds. The Phil Henry Show is back.
All right, now, tomorrow is another special day on The Phil Henry Show. Tomorrow is the top news stories of the year. We will recap them featuring a variety of wonderful expert guests that we had on our show over the last year. From January of 2002, Bobby Dooley, the Western States Homeowners Association, will be on to talk about the hockey dads who beat each other up. That one guy who beat that other hockey dad. That'll be a interesting, comment from Bobby that'll be replayed tomorrow. From February, Mavis Leonard was on our program. As you know, Mavis is an elderly woman who lives in Bellflower and is a member of the congregation at Joyful Union Congregation. And she counsels children. Many of the children in America, she claims, are afraid that their mother will drown them just like Andrea Yates drowned her kids, and so they're afraid to take baths. And so she'll be talking about that. Father James McWhorter will also be on tomorrow to talk about the sex scandals from March of this year. And this was right when they were beginning. I shouldn't even call them sex scandals. They're really assault and abuse scandals. But in Father McWhorter's mind, they're sex scandals. Or in his mind, they're really just wee peak scandals. Now, from April, Clara Bingham was on to talk about a rather interesting point of view. She's really happy that Robert Blake got arrested. Remember Robert Blake? You know, we've kind of forgotten about him. She's happy he got arrested because now maybe the white people will finally shut up about O.J. So that and a lot of other things will be happening. From May, we're going to have on Bud Dickman. I think it was Bud. He had a theory about Luke Helder, the pipe bomber. Remember him? See, these are all stories that we forgot about. And then from also May of this year, I think it's Margaret Gray who will be talking. We have to apologize to Gary Condit. Because he didn't really kill Chandra Levy. It's possible she got hit on the head with a coconut while she was sitting under the tree, and then she decomposed with dignity in a pile of leaves. All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. We got a flashback from just before we went on vacation. The president of the Western States Homeowners Association was with us, Bobby Dooley. She protested a production of A Christmas Carol at the Western States Community Center. She says that Dickens' A Christmas Carol is anti-Semitic. It portrays the handicapped as weaklings and the poor as blithering idiots.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
Yes, I am a teacher, and I see and I teach children every day that their parents struggle to put food on their table. And this year, they are
black.
Looking towards having a Christmas very sad and very drear.
And they're black.
No, they are not. They are white, ma'am. They are as white as the people in that Christmas carol.
Okay.
And I understand that it's, and you need to understand that it was set in England.
Mm-hmm.
That is why there are no African Americans in that story.
I was
but
in London.
The carol.
I was in
Christmas,
London. I saw a Negro in London.
Wait
at
a minute.
At
that time in the history of Great Britain, the British Empire had not yet collapsed to the point where their African subjects were moving back to the British Isle.
Oh, what kind of gobbledygook is that?
It's history.
That's a bunch of there's Negroes in England. I've seen one.
There is now, yes. But at that time, there was not as many as there are now.
Mm. Well, you know what?
And
I
second
know
of all, this story is can be adapted to any culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the people. It's not the characters. It is. It's
well,
just the lesson.
Can I ask you,
it has been adapted.
Can
that's television.
Can I ask
to
you
where there's
teacher?
An African-American Scrooge.
Can I ask you as a teacher?
Yes,
why
go ahead.
Why is Jacob Marley depicted as a dumb Southerner?
As far
why?
As I remember, he's not. He is coming back to teach a lesson.
Yeah.
He's coming back to help his friend.
Yeah, he was the dumb one that died, and he was from something like Texas.
What?
He
it's
was
in
not.
England. It wasn't Texas.
Y'all, Scrooge, y'all better be better.
Well, who was that? Is that your husband?
Yes.
Mr. Dooley, I never heard Jacob Marley use the phrase y'all. Never in all of the theatrical adaptions of this. Now, I have to say, I've never read it. It's a long, and have you read it, Jennifer? You being a teacher, I'm sure you have.
I have read it.
Okay,
yes.
It's a long.
And I do not remember anywhere in there introducing him as someone from Texas. I don't know. I don't understand where you've gotten that from.
Jacob Marley, you don't.
No, they never said that Scrooge's ex-partner, originally from Texas.
I've never,
you know,
I don't remember that at all.
I'm a mother, and I know that you're a teacher, Jennifer, and we want the same things.
I don't think we do, ma'am, no.
The poor white kids in your class, are their parents married to black men?
No, they're not.
Are their mothers married to black men? Are you sure?
No.
Why?
Yes,
why
I'm sure.
It's possible.
I saw them today at a Christmas play, and they are a very loving family, and they struggle every day. And I'm not just talking about one family.
No, Jennifer, what I'm worried about with the depiction of Tiny Tim, a lot of the retards, and the mentally challenged, I just don't want to see a mob of tards hobbling down Main Street, leg braces raised high, leaving a trail of drool, coming to kill all the two-leggers. What?
I think that just about ended that bit.
What did?
A trail of drool coming to kill all the two-leggers. That's marvelous.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
Do you know Joe Strummer died? I didn't know that. All last week. I might as well have been in Fiji last week for all the communication I had with popular culture. I was completely incommunicado. Joe Strummer is a... That hit me a little harder than perhaps most of these celebrity deaths because he was my age. I can't imagine Joe Strummer ever being 50, but the Clash were really the best evolution of punk rock, if you could say. You know, the Sex Pistols were something that were very theatrical and loud and brash, and there was a lot of vomit involved, but the Clash actually elevated it to a level where there was musicianship and there was songwriting and there was stage presence and there was politics, both capital P and small p, and it was, they were a great band, London Calling, tremendous album. And Joe Strummer would kick from a heart attack. I have nothing left to live for. At least they found him and he didn't decompose over like 6 weeks.
Joe Strummer was found by a janitor. Apparently he was dead, but we're not sure.
He was in a movie called Mystery Train, too, which is pretty cool. Did you ever see Mystery Train? It's a Jim Jarmusch film, and I don't know, he plays a wino or something. Okay, we're going to be back here on the Phil Hendry Show with some other interesting notes from the news, including we will discuss further cloning, and we're also going to be talking about security on New Year's Eve and some other things I think you'll find enjoyable. Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Our website is philhendryshow.com. If you missed our webcast a week ago Friday, you can log on if you have a backstage pass, and you can watch it on demand because we have it there in our webcast archives. That's philhendryshow.com.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. He's still Jenny on the block. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Tess of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
This portion of the Phil Hendry Show is brought to you by Tess of Beverly Hills. Hi, everybody, I'm Ted Bell. New Year's Eve at Ted's of Beverly Hills. Make your plans right now. We'll give you the number later on in the program.
Here at Ted's, we want to put our meat in your mouth.
All right, Ted's of Beverly Hills is bringing you this portion of the Phil Hendry Show. How are you, Ted?
Phil, I'm doing wonderfully well, thank you. And a happy new year to you and your family.
Thank you, and to you and yours. The people are concerned just a little bit about New Year's Eve.
I understand that.
And about the relative safety. You're a restaurant owner. Have you taken any security steps?
Phil, I don't think there is any reason for anybody to be afraid New Year's Eve. There's no increased threat level. I think people should feel free to go where they want, do what they want to do, enjoy their New Year's Eve. But I can tell you this, One place you will be guaranteed safe is at my restaurant, Ted's of Beverly Hills. Now, I'm not doing a commercial, and I want your listeners to understand me. I'm not doing a commercial. I'm simply saying, I'm speaking the facts, and the facts are these. You will be safe at Ted's of Beverly Hills.
All right, well, why do you say that?
Well, I'm going to explain. I'm Ted Bell. I built that restaurant with my bare hands, brick by brick, board by board, nail by nail. I built it with my bare hands. I'll tell you something else, Bill. You know this, coming from the Los Angeles area. We have a great many Iranian and Arabian residents in the Beverly Hills and West Side area. I have made it my business to get to know these people. And I've gotten to know them very well. And I have very good connections with the Arabs and with the Iranians on the West Side in Beverly Hills. And I'll tell you something. My name is Ted Bell. And when you come into my restaurant, you are safe. You can have a wonderful time on New Year's to celebrate the coming of the New Year 2003. I invite you to have a delicious Ted, to have a steak, one of our wonderful foil wrap baked potatoes with the serrated steak knives. Come on in, have the salad bar. Enjoy the salad bar. Remember, it's two servings per person. And enjoy Ted's of Beverly Hills, because I know there are a lot of places where people are afraid to go.
All right, so that we don't have this sound like a commercial, what we are talking about here is security and safety on New Year's Eve.
Absolutely.
And your place, you say, is safe, and you say that's because you have good relations with the Arab and Iranian residents out on the West Side. But those are law-abiding people anyway.
Well, let me explain something, Phil. Let me be clear. Yes, they're law-abiding people.
So we don't want it to appear that we're talking about Arab residents in Beverly Hills or Iranians on the West Side of L.A. or anywhere in the country being lawbreakers.
Well, but don't overstate the case too much, Phil. I know that we don't want to appear as if we're bashing an ethnicity here, but let's remember something. It was called 9/11. They were Saudi Arabians. I don't want that to get past anybody. You know, you can try all, you know, it's real nice that you're trying to be polite, but politeness only goes so far. And what I'm trying to say here, everything is safe at my restaurant. Now, a lot of restaurants across this country are going to be closing. A lot of places where people usually have fun will be closing. And the answer to the question, why are they closing, is simply this. They don't have the guts to stay open. Ted Bell does. I'm Ted Bell. I built this restaurant brick by brick, board by board, nail by nail. I was up nights going over the books, standing, talking to contractors, trying to bring this restaurant back after my father drank up the profits in 2 weeks after selling the restaurant. So what I'm saying to you is, while most restaurants don't have the guts to stay open on New Year's Eve, Ted Bell does.
Why do you say they don't have the guts to stay open on New Year's Eve?
Because they don't. Because most Americans are afraid of Arabs. After 9/11, Phil, most Americans are scared to death of an Arab. I'm not. After 9/11, most Americans are afraid to fly. I fly every week. After 9/11, most Americans are afraid to go to a large public gatherings. I love to go into large crowds. I'm Ted Bell. I don't have any fear of Arabs or anybody else, for that matter. My restaurant stays open, and it stays open for two reasons. One, I know how to network with these Arabs. Two, I got the guts to stay open while a lot of these people don't.
All right, and we don't want this to be the big-time commercial for your restaurant, but that's exactly what we just got.
Well,
that is kind of what we got.
No, hold on. Wait a minute. I can't let you get away with it. No, sir. If I knew of a restaurant, Phil, where they had the guts, and I mean the guts, to stay open, I was open July 4th when everybody wanted to close up because they thought the Arabs would be coming at us then. I was open, and my restaurant in Washington, D.C. stayed open during the sniper scare. When everybody else was closing up, I stayed open in D.C. I said to people, I dare you to come to my restaurant. Let's see if you got a pair hanging between your legs or if you're just...
Okay, can we, you know, we're in the dinner hour here.
I apologize for that. But I was the guy that stayed open. I stayed open during the church sex scandal. Everybody else was closing up when priests were molesting children everywhere. All the restaurants were closing. All of the coffee shops, nobody wanted to go near them. I stayed open. I stayed open when Elizabeth Smart went missing. Everybody was closing up.
Well, they were doing it out of respect for a little girl that went missing.
Well, you know, that's really touching. And I, of course, I have great respect for the parents of that child. Nothing closes Ted Bell. Nothing closes me. And that includes Arabs Iranians, I don't care who.
All right, I'm going to give our number out here. We're talking to Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. 1-800-44... Can we not... We're not doing the commercial yet.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kevin.
We're not doing the commercial yet. Our number is 1-800-449...
Are we into the spot?
No, we're not. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Ted, I want to get to a couple of questions here. You say the American people are afraid to fly... They're afraid of Arabs.
Oh, absolutely. The American people have allowed themselves to be bullied. I don't allow myself to get bullied. All right? Most Americans, like I said, are afraid of Arabs. You see, Americans are doing exactly what the Arabs wanted to do. I don't. I do what I want to do. I stay open when I want to stay open. And when I tell you you can come into my restaurant and feel safe, that's exactly what's going to happen. Not what I want to happen, not what I hope will happen. Exactly what's going to happen. I can understand why your listeners may not want to go to some restaurants on New Year's Eve. You come to Ted's. No Arab's going to try anything here.
All right, so you were saying you have a networking, or a network, I should say, of Arab friends.
Yeah, absolutely, Phil.
Okay, can you tell me about that? I mean, in the...
Well, look, there's three things that Arabs like. Three things. Three things that your average Arab likes. Horse races, horses... The Mercedes-Benz and white women. And I do what I... And I, forgive me, Phil.
Oh, boy.
No, but forgive me. That's exactly what they like. They like white women, horse racing, and Mercedes-Benzes. And I do not discourage my waitresses or any of my female employees from having a social relationship with these people. And the other thing that your Arab likes is American liquor. Now, they don't allow it over there because they're Muslims and they make a big show about how they don't drink. They come over here, they guzzle that stuff. They're drinking it like rainwater. And I don't have anything against giving some of my Arab friends a bonded bottle of some good scotch, some of that good Kentucky bourbon, or whatever. Because that's what makes friends. I'm Ted Bell. I built my restaurant...
Yeah, brick by brick, I understand. And you do a good job.
Well, don't blow it off like it's nothing. Arabs like booze... White women, Mercedes-Benz, and horses. If you can understand that, you will never have another World Trade Center incident again, as long as you live.
Those guys that did the World Trade Center, if I would have laid a bottle of bonded Kentucky bourbon on them, everything would have been cool?
Maybe. Maybe.
And a few white chicks.
You got it.
Well, they were in a bar the night before, having all the white women they wanted, and all the booze they wanted to drink.
Obviously not enough.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Are most people in America afraid of Arabs? Are they being bullied by the Arabs? Is Ted Bell the only restaurateur in America with the guts to stay open on New Year's Eve? We'll find out. Our number is 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Car dealers in our next life.
Out there, take them out back so the customers can't see.
Hey, Ted.
I'm sorry. Everybody, come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. We've got a fantastic array. New Year's Eve is going to be fantastic. Well, take the goddamn price.
You're on the air, Ted.
Forgive me. You know what's going on, Phil. We're planning. I apologize. We're planning the New Year's festivities, and I apologize.
I understand it's busy at the restaurant. Were you not told we were back on the air?
You know what? That's it. That's what happened. Janice is your producer, right?
Yeah.
She did not tell me we were back on the air.
She's nodding her head and saying that she did.
Let me just say this. No, she didn't. Otherwise, I'm not going to be screaming at one of my busboys to get crates of wine out of the floor between the restrooms and the dining area. No, she didn't.
All right. We're talking with Ted Bell about
New Year's Eve and what's going on at his restaurant, and are there any security concerns? Our number is 1-800-449-8686. If you have a security concern, Ted, do you feel that when you say that you're not afraid and your restaurant is staying open, do you think there's going to be a lot of restaurants closing this New Year's Eve?
I don't think so, Phil. I think we're going to be all right. I don't hear of anything. I know that there's five terrorists. You made a joke about them getting in from Canada, which, you know, what else is new? But I think everything's all right. What I'm saying is this. Were we under an elevated risk of threat, you would see a lot of restaurants closing up, but you're not going to see Ted Bell close his restaurant. I haven't closed the door of my restaurant in 22 years, and brother, it's going to take a lot more than Saddam Hussein or any of these other individuals who want to take away our way of life to make me close the doors of my restaurant.
All right, now you were talking also about the connection you have with the Arab business people in Beverly Hills and how other people can perhaps learn from that.
Well, I just think if you know, there's five things that Arabs love, and this isn't any knock on them. A lot of them come from Muslim countries where they're deprived these things, and so it becomes very exciting for them to have some of these things. They love American liquor. They love white women. They love the...
When you say white women, are you talking about... What are you talking... White American?
Well, they like American women. I don't know that they like black American women. I think they like the white women. Because when you see these Arabs, and they like... The thing about your Arab is he likes white women with large breasts, really huge, huge breasts, and blonde. So in other words, they want the total opposite of the Arab woman. A flat ass, big, huge, huge breasts, and blonde hair, okay?
The total opposite of an Arab woman.
Absolutely. All right, that's number two. The next thing they like are horses and horse races, and they like the Mercedes-Benz. If you have an Arab neighbor, give them a peace offering of something like that. And I'm going to say this as delicately as I can. If your wife finds him attractive,
Well, you know that that isn't going to happen.
Well... So you want another 3,000 people dead, is that it?
Wait a minute, Ted. There's no way that American men, there's no way that anybody that I know is going to have turn his wife over to an Arab so we don't have another World Trade Center.
So you wouldn't?
No, I wouldn't.
So you'd rather see 3,000 people cooked?
No, I didn't say that. I'm saying that there's no way that we're going to prostitute.
They like white women. Besides, who says your wife? Does your wife have huge breasts?
None of your business.
All right. Look, you offer this to Arabs, and I'm telling you, this country can say bye-bye to orange alerts forever. Otherwise, they're persnickety people. They get upset. They're a very strange bunch of people anyway. They live out in the middle of a sand dune. I mean, you've heard all of the arguments about why these people cannot be dealt with and why we can't do business with them. I'm Ted Bell. I know how to do it. And I can tell you this right now, Phil. You give them some of that bonded liquor. You give them a blonde with the biggest hooters in the history of man on this earth. Enormous. The bigger, the better. And make sure she doesn't have that big bubble ass that those Arab broads have got. And you got yourself...
Oh, man. You know what? You are going to get a bomb rolled into your restaurant on New Year's Eve.
Why?
Why? Listen to you.
What did I do?
You're talking about these people as if they're... Yeah, give them some of that booze and what are they, Indians on the reservation? So you're buying off Arab business people of Beverly Hills. You're thinking that they may have something to do with terrorism over there?
I'm not buying anybody off, but when you see an opening, as they say, you take it. One thing about an Arab, you throw some booze and a white woman their way and they'll do whatever you tell them to do. It's as simple as that. I've got an Arab neighbor that hasn't received a gift from me. Now I'm looking around and I'm going to tell you something right now. I'm scared. I got an Arab living next to me that hasn't gotten a gift from me. I'm looking around for a blonde with 40-plus double Ds, so help me. If you know a woman with blonde hair and 40-plus double D breasts, call my restaurant. And I want to give the number, if I could.
No, you may not.
You got to understand something.
No, you may not give the number. I don't care. You can look it up in the Yellow Pages.
So you want to see me bombed out of my business?
Yeah, that's what's going to happen, Ted. If you don't get an Arab, a blonde with big breasts, you're going to get your restaurant blown up. All right, look, I wish you well on New Year's Eve. You know that I'll be there. And
but one thing, seriously, Phil, I want to say, if you just give them liquor and white women, an Arab will do anything you want. All right? So this is the thing that I think President Bush needs to understand. More than anything else,
more than oil diplomacy, more than any, just white women and booze.
That's exactly right. And I said, you know, Jim Chewer, don't you?
Sure.
All right. I sent Jim to Washington, and he sat down with an aide to the president. He got to meet Mike Michelson, who's one of the top aides to the president. He didn't get in to see the president, but he said, "Look, I don't know what the president's doing, fooling around, putting up with this trilateral diplomacy between Yemen, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia." With all of these promises about terrorism this and weapons that, give these guys what they really want, white women and liquor, and they're gonna give us all the oil we want, and they'll let us land on their bases. If we could send over Tommy Franks with a case of booze and a plane full of broads barely dressed, we'd get anything we want out of them. But they didn't take the meeting.
I can understand why.
Okay. Well, Phil, I got the big business with the Arabs. You don't, okay?
All right, well, good luck on New Year's Eve. I'll be there, and I won't fear for my life.
Man, you should not. I'm Ted Bell. I built that place
brick by brick.
Board by board.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. So if you want to get along with your Arab neighbor, just chick a big case of liquor. She's going to be fine. I don't know about the Arab, but she will be. All right, 1-800-449-8686. It's the Phil Hendry Show, and our website is philhendryshow.com. Now, you remember our webcast on Friday? It's now been archived, so you can look at that and see exactly what this is about, this show and everything about this show. Check out the website archive, and I think we've now got two in there from last year and this year. Now, the website address is philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. Also, I wonder if the sales of our CD have dropped off after Christmas, or are they still pumping along pretty good? Were they going to give us an update? I would like totals updating the sale of our CD if we can. 1-877-616-PHIL, 1-877-616-PHIL to get our CD.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686, Whitney Houston's dealer.
And now more on the Phil Hendry Show.
Vernon Dozier joins me now from South Pasadena, California. You are making a claim that is, it's a little unusual, sir. You are a white man, correct? Mr. Dozier?
Yes, sir, I'm right here.
You're a white man, right?
Yes, sir, I'm a European American.
You claim to have invented Kwanzaa or that it was misappropriated?
Well, the story is, Phil, I approached an associate professor the sociology department, University of California, Berkeley.
When was this?
This was on January 27th, 1980.
22 years ago?
22, almost 23 years ago, yeah. And I told him that I had an idea for a festival that would celebrate African-American heritage, and my idea was to call it Africa Week, so that Africans in America could celebrate something that was like Christmas, and I further stated that because I was white, I knew that I would not be able to be the front man, so to speak. So I asked this gentleman if he would pass it around campus among the professors and see if there was interest.
Interest in an Africa Week.
That is correct, yeah.
Now, did you copyright this name?
I copyrighted the name Africa Week. And Africa Week was to celebrate. See, the reason why I
yeah, why in the first place did you think of this? You, a white man, why did you think of an Africa Week?
Well, I had been in Atlanta, Georgia about 2 years before that. I'd lived in Atlanta for about 3 years. There are a lot of African Americans there, and they were very upset, and they were angry about a lot of things. And I'd been reading the news, and I saw how angry and upset a lot of black people are, and I wanted them to, you know, give them something that they wouldn't complain about, because it seems to me that all they ever do is complain, and so I wanted to give them one thing they wouldn't complain about, just mostly just to, I thought there was an opportunity that they'd have, you know, they could be happy about one thing at least, and, you know, and I could make some money, and I admit that this is not entirely magnanimity on my part. I do want to make some money.
So you started African Week because black people complain so much. You wanted to hear, give them something they wouldn't complain about.
Yeah, I mean, again, I lived in Atlanta. Have you ever lived in Atlanta?
Yes, sir. I lived there for a year.
Well, there are tons and tons of blacks there, and I thought about how much complaining they were doing. They were always complaining about this or that, or so I wanted to have Africa Week so they could jump around and do whatever they do and be happy for a change. And I came up with the idea Africa Week, and I copyrighted the name. I found an import-export business that dealt in tribal artifacts, in tribal artifacts and in different earrings and dresses, different spears they used, and all that, the costumes. And then I had a Jewish friend, and I borrowed his menorah that he had, and I took off two of the candle holders so that there were only six or seven. And because the one thing you don't want to do is give blacks any idea that they owe something to Jews. They hate having to owe anything to a Jew. So,
Before we get into all of that and what your impressions are of the relations between African Americans and Jewish people, what was the menorah? I don't understand that.
In the Africa Week that I invented, you have candles, seven candles. You can light one every day, and it's a ritual.
What does it represent?
Well, I told this professor, you can make it anything you want. See, there's candles, there's spears, you know, chicken and corn and all of that. Do whatever you want with it. We'll call it Africa Week. And I wanted the merchandising rights to
the things they sold?
Yeah, to anything they sold, the spearheads or the bongo drums or anything that the blacks do on Africa Week. Now, what happened was 5 years later, I hear about Kwanzaa. And I'm going to tell you, I thought I was going to fall out of my chair when I heard, oh, we're having a Kwanzaa celebration and we're doing this, we're doing that. I thought that this guy completely stole my idea.
All right, well, before we go further, I am told, I'm informed by my producer, that Kwanzaa started in 1966.
Which is a total lie. They did not start in 1966. It started with my idea in 1980, and this idea that it started in 1966 is to misappropriate my idea.
Well, it was the claim is that it was that Kwanzaa was started in 1966 by a black professor at Cal Berkeley.
Which, again, is a lie. It was started by me. It was taken up to Cal Berkeley by one other guy. And this guy then took it out. And what the problem is everybody thinks this Kwanzaa is some kind of a celebration. I mean, there's merchandising rights to this, and I had lip plates and the Ubangi, I don't know what you call it, but the ones that make the Ubangi lips, I had all of those, and I had on order. I had those on stock order. I had those on stock order through Switzerland, but I was going to get them at a half price.
Well, it doesn't matter to me where you were getting all of the stuff that you were going to sell it on Africa Week. You're making a claim here. Now, how can anybody prove this?
Well, that's just it. I would like to go to court to try to prove it.
Who was the gentleman that you spoke with?
I do not know his name. I do not know his
name. Well, that's a big problem.
I understand that. Yes, sir, I do. I understand that. But if I can get a rostrum of the professor's names from that period, I think I could reconstruct. And my attorney has told me that I at least should sue for compensation for mental suffering, because I literally had an awful lot of money taken out from everything. And I want to publicize that I invented Africa Week.
Well, Hal, let me, I've got to ask you this much, and I really want to, you want to publicize now, and yet back then, you didn't want to publicize it.
No, I did not. That's correct.
And the reason was a very good one. A white guy can't front something like that.
That is correct.
Well, now, by saying that you invented it, what do you think is going to happen to what you call Africa Week or Kwanzaa?
You know what, at this point, I don't care, Phil. I really don't care. I think that I have been wronged. I think I have been wronged seriously. And I don't honestly give a sweet good damn what happens. I'm owed money. Africa Week was my idea.
I want to ask you this, Mr. Dozier. You're talking about importing lip plates and spearheads and stuff. Do you have a genuine respect for African culture and the African-American experience?
Yes, I do. I mean, I'm just a businessman. I look for opportunities. But yes, I do. I've dealt with African American people. They are just like everybody else. They've got strengths and they got weaknesses.
But you see, you said your idea for Africa Week came from you were tired of hearing black people complain.
Well, I mean, you ask any white man, do you think black people are happy? No, then they had a white person around. They're going to tell you what, black folks are happy because all they ever do is complain. And I just want to listen to them say, hey, this is really great. And it's happened, Phil. It's happened over the last 17 years that black folks go, well, at least we got Kwanzaa and we can, do the jitterbug or whatever they do. Now, they complain they're losing their heritage, and I've tried to give it back to them. And
just that comment there.
What?
They can do the jitterbug or whatever they do.
I'm saying I do not have a familiarity, sir, with their culture to know exactly what goes on.
But if you invented Africa Week, did you have...
I invented a name and I invented an overall umbrella concept. What they filled it up with is their business.
But you were going to be selling spearheads on the side.
I my idea was to have booths at Africa Week festivals and sell spears, or the masks and the shields and stuff.
You're going to sell a movie version of Africa.
Oh, I'm sorry?
You were going to sell a movie version of spears and shields and spearheads.
No, I'm importing this.
This stuff's coming from Africa.
Yes, sir, it is. Yeah, no, it's not going to be all a movie version. I have elephant stuff. I don't know if you want me to go into it, but I got all kinds of robes and pants and sandals and I got a warehouse full of this garbage, and now these blacks up there at Berkeley stole it from me. And I say these blacks, and I say it with due respect. But you talk about spear. I took a spear right in the back on this deal. So what I'm trying to do is publicize.
You want to publicize that you, Vernon Dozier, a white man from South Pasadena, invented Kwanzaa in 1980, and it was called Africa Week.
That is correct, yeah.
Because you couldn't think of anything better?
I don't understand your question.
Well, I mean, Kwanzaa's a lot more colorful.
Well, like I said, I don't give a good sweet Jesus what they call it. They could call it, they could call it Night of the Living Dead for all I care. I just wanted to have my name recognized as the guy that started it. But Africa Week seemed like a good, or African Week, I forget what I called it. I called it a lot of things, Black Week, or Celebrate Being Black, something like that.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. This guy's tale is an interesting one. He is a white football coach from South Pasadena who claims he invented Kwanzaa back in 1980. He called it Africa Week. And he proffered the idea to a black professor at the University of California at Berkeley, not the one who was supposedly invented it. And now he says it's been ripped off. And he wants compensation. Can I ask you one more question, Mr. Dozier?
Certainly.
Do you want to still sell your products?
I just want the right to sell. They can keep their name, Kwanzaa. I want to be able to sell my Africa Week products under a different name entirely.
Africa Week products?
Right.
Which are the lip plates and the...
Well, you're taking offense at it. I mean, But yeah, I got stuff that'll make your lips go out, everything. And the young girls love it. I mean, the kids are now wearing the earrings, and we've got ones that'll make the earlobes go down about a foot. I got a 13,000-foot warehouse full of ankle bells, nose rings, grape soda. I'll tell you right now, you'd like to freak when you take a look at what I got.
All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. A real irony if it would turn out that a celebration of black culture in America, Kwanzaa, was actually invented by a white man. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686, pure exhibitionism. Show 1-800-449-8686.
Vernon Dozier's with us. He is a businessman. Vernon, no, you're not a businessman. You're a teacher, right?
I'm an educator, yes, sir.
As a high school football coach?
I actually teach mathematics. I coach varsity football for Belmar Academy in Glendale, California.
Okay, sir, you said that you invented Africa Week because you were in Atlanta and you saw a lot of black folks and you were struck by how they complained all the time about their lot in life and you wanted to invent something that they could celebrate.
Yes, but I also had an African-American girlfriend. I had a lot of black friends, and I'll tell you, I loved her very much. Her name was Yvonne, and every day with her was a celebration. We had actually planned to be married, but she would go on and on and on about her heritage this and her heritage that, and you know, Africa this and Africa that. She got one of these. She went to Epcot in Disney World and went to the Africa place, picked up a robe. If you've ever been to Epcot, they've got different areas of the world, and there's a. One part, it's called Africa Land or something, where you go in and you can buy these Africa, or what the African natives wear. And so she had that. So she's going on and on. I said, look, and I literally said this to her. I said, if I invented a holiday for the black folks, would you shut up? And she said, well, okay. And, you know, because she was very beautiful and we loved to be intimate with each other.
So you said, if I invent a holiday for you, will you shut up?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's pretty much how it went.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Teddy, go ahead. You're on with Vernon Dozier and Phil Hendry.
I have to tell you, I said, listening to you, Kwanzaa is something that was developed to instill black pride. You claim that you did this because you wanted to black people to stop complaining. Just listening to the
well,
way
that's
you
right.
talk,
that's the same
some
thing.
Of my best. Some of my best friends are black kind of situation. You are the one of the worst kind of people. You are as racist
as those
people.
I'm the one who invented it. I'm the one who invented it. What did you do?
You don't invent something like this.
I invented Kwanzaa. There was no Kwanzaa.
I am not black, okay? I happen to be Jewish.
Well, I can tell that right away by your accent, ma'am.
Well, you can. Well, that's from New York.
The Jewish
that's not
accent.
Jewish. All people.
The
no,
Jewish
my
accent is very distinct.
Oh, wait, she says she's from New York.
It's called a New York accent. Italian people from New York sound like me too, but I think you have a lot of problems with bigotry, sir. And
well,
it comes through when you talk about the black thing, and you don't have, and you're an educator. You have no idea what black culture is all about.
May I ask you a
question? You don't know anything about it.
May I ask you a question?
How dare you make money off of somebody? Of the two of us,
which one of us slept with a black person? Me.
That makes you what?
At least I've gotten about as close to a black person as you can get without. Okay, that's number one. Number two, of the two of us, which one of us invented Kwanzaa? I did. And you're lecturing me on race relations. Now, I have said things about
because I have physically worked.
You want to hear a joke? You want to hear a joke?
I'm afraid to hear it.
Do you have any black in you?
I have any black in me?
Right.
No.
Do you want some?
Jesus. You know, it's not very...
It's a joke, Mr. Hendry, that I heard in Atlanta years ago.
All right. It's not very funny.
It's also classless.
I beg your pardon, ma'am?
classless.
Well, let me say this. I went to a professor at Berkeley. I invented Africa Week. This guy turns around and calls it Kwanzaa, which is some made-up baloney.
But what was your purpose in inventing it? What was your purpose? Was it not self-motivated?
Well, the guy, everybody that celebrates Kwanzaa is self-motivated. Look,
no, was your purpose in inventing or Africa Week, was it not motivated out of exploiting a situation to make money? Or did you really care about
that
you really care about the people
that you
were making money off of?
It's a good question, Teddy. What's your answer, Vernon?
I can answer the question this way. I had a very dear friend, Mr. Bob Scarlett, who died of a heart attack in 1978. He had a warehouse full of a lot of this African stuff, and I decided to come up with Africa Week. To sell the merchandise, number one, but number two, to get these blacks to be quiet. Now, you call that self-motivated, you know, well...
You had a warehouse full of Africans.
What do you mean to be quiet?
Every time you turn around, the blacks are complaining about something. I said, well, look, I'll start this... I originally wanted to call it People of Color Week, and a friend of mine said, no, it sounds too much like Colored People Week. I asked my girlfriend, she said, how about, and she came up with some, Ramar the Jungle word, she came up with a jungle word that I didn't understand. So I said, why don't we call it African People Week, and then we shorten it down to Africa Week.
Right.
That's the truth.
I really think if you should be honest with yourself.
Look, ma'am, you're Jewish, and you got to know this. Blacks, they don't want to know from Jews, see.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. I mean, I say that, really. I said to them, now where is it? I got it in my notes here. I said, well, look, I can't give, you know, the blacks, they use like a menorah, but they busted off two. I busted off two of the things, but I can't say, here's a menorah, because they say, well, if that's Jewish, forget it. Get it out of here. See, I'm helping out the Jews by not making a menorah.
Okay. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. You need a checkup from the neck up. Now, Phil Hendry.
Tomorrow on our show, we're going to have the top news stories of the year 2002. We'll be playing back interviews, portions of interviews with a variety of guests from last year. And earlier, I mentioned a few of those. We will have, for instance, from the month of April, an interview with Clara Bingham of Joyful Union Congregation, who was expressing the opinion that Robert Blake's arrest now finally shuts up white people about O.J., so we'll be hearing from her. There was also the Luke Helder pipe bomber. These are a lot of stories that I forgot about. There was the tragic story of Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street Journal journalist. Also, from the month of May, Margaret talked about Chandra Levy, the possibility that no one killed her, that she went to sleep under a tree in that park, what is the name of that park in Washington, D.C.? I forget the name of it. Rock Creek, I think, was the name of it. And a coconut or something fell on her head, and then she just, you know, sort of died there, and then wild animals. Anyway, it's probably funnier when we did it back in May. And then in June, Bobby Dooley was on talking about how she was going to, along with other members of the Homeowners Association, kidnap children to see if they were safe in their homes this hot on the heels of Elizabeth Smart's disappearance. Bin Laden was in the news. Martha Stewart was in the news. Remember that? Elizabeth Smart stayed in the news for a long time. Then WorldCom came along. Who remembers that? The priest sex scandal. The Tawny Katane thing. Everybody tried to make that a news story. That was like nowhere, man. Just nowhere. Whatever. She hit her husband. I'm sure she slapped him, and they made a big deal out of it. Give it up. Al-Qaeda had threats during the month of July in anticipation of July the 4th. Who will ever forget July 4th when that plane crashed out there in San Dimas, and at the same time that screwball Egyptian went into LAX and shot those poor people, and suddenly Fox and CNN have got them both up split-screened as if they're terrorist attacks of some kind. Who will ever forget that day? And we were all ready to go on the air. Remember, you drove in, Janice? In fact, I was trying to get you on the phone to tell you to turn around and go back home because I didn't think there was going to really be anything, but I was going to come on the air and say what I felt about the ridiculous coverage of everything and then go back to the barbecue that I was at, which is exactly what I did. Also, there was the David Westerfield verdict. There was more on David Westerfield during the month of August. We did that material. There was that little girl in September who got beaten in the parking lot by her mother, who was a traveling Wilbury. What the hell do they call those people? An Irish traveler. Irish traveler. What the hell kind of organization is that? Sounds like a lodge. And you talk about white trash. Jeez, it's never in the history of man on this earth been surpassed by some of the things I heard those people say. We're just trying to make a living. Excuse me, it's stealing. It's against the law. Oh, you're always coming down on us. Yeah, that's what we do with people who break the law. Oh, you must hate the Irish. Not really, I'm Irish. Well, I don't know. Yeah, you sit down and think about something there, Seamus. The hell? In October, we also had Jay Santos sanding small patches of paint off of cars to see if they'd been recently painted. Why? Because the sniper, the Washington, D.C. sniper, was on the loose. That was back in October. That was a huge thing that went on for 3 or 4 weeks. There's always, the last year, there's always something very screwy going on. We've gotten used to the screwy stuff. In November, Winona Ryder and her little escapade. And then finally, Trent Lott. Trent Lott, who shot himself in the foot, he put the gun in his pants and pulled the trigger. What are you talking about, shot himself in his foot? And that was the year that was 2002, and all day tomorrow, we have selected interviews of various guests that we had on this program over 2002, talking about those news stories, just small 2, 3, 4 minute clips of those guests. It'll be on our radio show tomorrow. We hope you'll join us. And as, of course, you know, many of you, and if you just joined this program, the guests that you'll be hearing tomorrow that I'll be interviewing are also voices being done by me. Don't know what it is I just said? Kind of shock you? It's kind of gone in one ear and out the other? Don't quite get it? You will. Even my engineer, Craig Taylor, has worked with me now going on 3 years. He doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about. Even when I'm on the phone doing my character voices, he's, well, what do you mean by character? Isn't that a guest you're doing? Okay. 1-800-44, he asked me, who are you talking to on the phone, Phil? Our number is 1-800-449-8686. This is The Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Controlled by the International Jewish Media Conspiracy.
I'm going to talk cloning just a little bit here with Jeff Dowder. He's from Caltech University, a professor of mechanical physics, and I don't know a lot about cloning other than it is the use of a cell to create another human being. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? And would you comment, Professor Dowder, on the clone that apparently has been announced here in Quebec and is possibly going to be visiting the United States?
Well, that's something I might have to wait and see. But my professional opinion is it's probably not a clone. I think there's probably been some in vitro fertilization involved, and I think that the science of human cloning is that far advanced. In answer to your second question about do I believe in cloning, yes, I do. Because I do think it presents an opportunity for the families that can't have kids to have a baby.
Why? What? In what way?
Well, I think first of all, the obvious way that you can create a child without the usual process of natural insemination and uterine birth. That the child can be cloned from a cell, reinserted into the uterus of a surrogate,
and be born. But more to the point, I think that the cloning process allows us to eliminate from the generational process of regeneration what you might want to call defects or defective people. This is an exciting possibility that I was talking to a friend of mine about, and it's pretty good because, first of all, if you're married to a woman and you want to have a child, but you are not confident that she's the smartest woman you ever met, or maybe she's not the best looking, or you just want to ensure that your child has the top-notch genes to have, then what you can do is you can just clone yourself. You don't have to clone her.
Well, okay, now that's a very interesting. If a couple is childless, which cell are they using?
Well, I would say they have to sit down and agree, look, I mean, you know, and a friend of mine was joking about it. He'd say, well, look, I've seen your family, no offense, but I think we better clone me. I mean, that's literally what...
But can a woman love a child that is the clone of her husband?
I think they can, because women are programmed in a lot of ways emotionally to bond with a child, with a children child, and the other thing too is that I think she'll know. Look, a woman would rather have a healthy kid than a retard, or not a retard, but a retarded kid. And I remember when I was in school, I'd look around at all these stupid kids, and I'd wonder how their mothers and fathers could stay together. Because, you know, you never want to have a retarded kid, because it strains the marriage. So,
well, I don't know that that's the case. And with all due respect, Professor, I think you need to maybe stick with, you know, what you know here.
I'm not saying all the time, but I remember I went out with this girl, Gina Santini, and my friend said, dude, look at her mother. And her mother was this large Italian fat woman. And he said, not only is Gina going to look like that, but so's your kid. And I said, good idea. And we broke up. With cloning, I would never have to break up with her. On account I could have cloned me, and I never would have cloned her.
All right, Professor Jeff Dotter from Caltech talking about cloning. How can you be sure the clone child won't be, as you put it, stupid? You can control physicality. Can you control the mind?
Well, the mind comes down the same way. The brain is the same. We can clone, for instance, George Washington. We can have him as a president if we wanted him to. And obviously, with today's modern dental work, you could easily, you know, replace the wooden teeth with new ones. When you clone a person, you clone off the mental part, too. You're cloning it off. Okay? And
what do you mean, replace the wooden teeth? You're talking about replacing the wooden teeth.
What?
What you just said.
About what?
About replacing the wooden teeth.
You could do it. You could replace the wooden teeth.
Well, he's not going to be born with wooden teeth.
No, if you clone, yes, you are. Yes, you are.
No, you're not. Even I know. I'm not a doctor.
No, when you clone the person, you're cloning off the whole enchilada. You can't pick and choose what you're cloning.
Wait a minute. When you clone somebody, you're cloning only their genetics. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Is it in the genetics of George Washington to have wooden teeth?
The clone is the exact replica of you, Mr. Henry. That's all I'm trying to tell you. I mean, you can go any which way you want on this. But you can clone Abraham Lincoln. You can clone Thomas Edison. You can clone even like Cary Grant. You could clone Rock Hudson, but not clone the AIDS part. You could clone...
Well, now that goes against with what you just said, because you said you got to clone the guy off exactly, even George Washington's wooden teeth. Now I can clone off Rock Hudson without the AIDS?
Yes, sir.
Then why don't I clone off George Washington without the wooden teeth?
Well, you just asked me. I'm just saying it's that replica.
All right. But let's get back to this idea that you were talking about. A woman and a man fall in love. You meet a girl, but you can tell that you don't like her genes mixed up with yours, so you can clone you.
But yeah, as you were saying, it wouldn't be both of your babies.
Right. It would be just your baby.
But because we love and because she loves me, she would love my clone as her own child. So many marriages fall apart because the child is embarrassing. But I remember I went out with that. I told you about Gina Santini. She was, you know, fat and Italian. The other thing, Mr. Henry, we make mistakes as people like Michael Jackson. I'm sure he would like to start over again with his regular face instead of the one that was redesigned. You could clone off him and get the regular face back on because that face he's got, forget it.
Isn't this really about couples having a baby?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
But this is a step further. You can clone off the parent with better genes and not have to worry about your wife mixing in her genes. And that's more exciting.
All right, we're talking with Jeff Dowder here about cloning. Not cloning off the bad genes, and that's more exciting. What you're saying is you'll have a more perfect baby.
That is correct, yeah.
All right.
Another thing, many of our Cuban and Mexican friends would like to be white. By manipulating the clone, we can now, for the first time, allow their Hispanic family to have a white child, and they can break the dishwashing cycle, which is a kind of a joke that scientists have among themselves. Cuban children will be dishwashers, and that's not fair. So what we're saying, Mr. Henry, is the cloning process finally eliminates the anger you'll have towards your wife or husband because your kid come out bad. And with family genes, or is your genes or his genes. And plus, you won't have to deal with in-laws because they wouldn't want to visit your house on Christmas or whatever when all they'd be doing was hanging around with your clone.
Yeah?
All they'd be doing was hanging around with your clone and not their genes.
Uh-huh. So your in-laws don't visit because all they'd be doing was hanging around with my clone and not their genes.
Well, yeah.
Is a clone an exact duplicate of you emotionally?
Well, yes, it is. And the thing about a clone is it'll respect your life. It'll repeat your life as closely as possible because it's you. I was joking with Toby Bo, who's been working on this with me. I had sex with a woman back when I was 21 that I regret having had sex with. My clone won't do that. I can train it not to. I'll tell it the mistakes that I made. The clone will save our world from stupid people, making children together. The superior mate gets cloned. The inferior mate don't not.
The inferior mate don't not. You know, if you met a woman, would you clone you or would you clone her?
Oh, well, I clone me.
Because you're a Caltech professor who says don't not.
Okay, I misspoke. Would you excuse me for a minute? I'd like to have some water. I've been choking.
Go ahead. Better?
Yeah. The best part, Phil, of the cloning process is the government gets to choose this. You don't, neither does your wife, so no one gets hurt. The government chooses. So if your wife is really, you know, if, for instance, you looked at her family and they were straight out of dog patch, and you don't really think that having a baby with her is the best idea, the government will step in and clone you off. So I think that it's a very exciting time, Phil. I think there's a lot of people going to want to have a clone. And I think the clone, just two things you got to remember. The clone's going to look just like you, and the mind part will come along with the new clone.
All right. My clone is going to grow up to be a radio jock?
Yeah. It will.
So if I make a clone, he will grow up to go into radio.
Yes.
Will he do the same kind of show as me?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, what's the point of that?
What?
What's the point of that? What is he going to? I might as well call him Phil Henry number two.
Well, there a lot of the government's now the government's right now rebooting or reprogramming a lot of computers so that they can, if we run out of names, because right now we're running out of names. And I don't know if you heard about it, but we're running out of names.
What do you mean we're running out of names?
We're running out of names. So we're finally now down to a point where there's no more names left. Now we got to go like my name is Jeff Dowder. Now I got to go to Jeff Dowder 2. Okay, but at least your clone won't be retarded. And you imagine, can you imagine a retard radio host? I can, other than, you know, like Jim Rome or somebody. But the thing is...
Okay, that's fine.
But seriously, I wanted to say this. My clone will do everything that I want it to do, and I, like I said, I can train it not to have sex with that one fat girl from UCLA. But the problem is we've run it out of names. We've got enough Phils, okay? There's too many Phils. So your clone would be Phil 8592. And then the last name, Henry, would be Henry 7373.
So what's my clone's name?
Phil 8592, Henry 7373. I might clone like Pamela Anderson, but without the hepatitis. And I would leave out her teeth, too, because... You know, you want her dropping down on that thing, man. You don't need no teeth action. And maybe I would teach her not to talk and stuff, too. So those are all the exciting possibilities. And
what do you mean without the hepatitis? What a moron you are. A Caltech professor.
Tell me I'm wrong.
About what?
Wouldn't you want to clone out Pamela Anderson without the hepatitis?
No, I wouldn't.
I don't need that stuff on my wank, man. Well, I found out that Pamela Anderson had a hippopotamus. I was...
Thank you. What a sick freak. Jeff Dowder from Caltech on cloning. Don't forget, man, if you get a clone, then your in-laws won't come around bugging you because they'll have to hang around with your clone instead of hanging around with their own genes. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Communist influenced. Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
It was cool. Yesterday we went to the movies, Marie and I, and because the kids are gone for the week, and this is our chance to, you know, have sex, go to movies, eat, things like that. And so we actually had a very fine Italian meal last night at a Italian restaurant. Drank, oh, I don't know, a bottle of wine. Went to a movie. And the movie we saw was this Catch Me If You Can. Have you seen this? With Leonardo DiCaprio. Now, we were going to go and see Gangs of New York. And I'm talking to the Rotund theater manager. He's kind of a kid around 25, 26 with bleach blonde hair. And I'm going, well, we had tickets to see, we wanted to see Gangs of New York. Oh, it's a lousy movie. Lousy. Oh, yeah, it's terrible. Lousy. Lousy. It stinks. It sucks. I appreciated the candor. This guy's the manager of the movie theater. I said, what's lousy about it? Well, Leonardo DiCaprio, for starters, I said, well... You know, you got me there, and I said, because I don't think there's ever been a movie that he has not ruined. That's what I said to this guy. Then I said, well, what about this Catch Me If You Can? My wife and I just got tickets for that, because why is Gangs of New York sold out if it's so lousy? Well, we had it in two theaters, and we moved it down to one, because we had it, and they couldn't sell out the two theaters, so now it's down to one. He says, well, Catch Me If You Can, it's actually pretty good. DiCaprio's pretty good in this movie. I said, why? He says, because he plays a slime ball with all the pearly whites and the bullcrap. This guy's story is incredible. The story of the man that DiCaprio plays, it's a true story. True story. The story of a guy by the name of Frank Abagnale. He was a con man at the age of 16. 16. And from the time he was 16 to the time he was 21, he successfully impersonated an airline pilot, a lawyer, a doctor, and a professor, a college professor. In any event, we watched the film. Tom Hanks plays the FBI agent who eventually captures him. And, of course, it says inspired by a true story. And what that means, it's a Steven Spielberg film, and what that means, inspired by a true story, is it basically means we butchered it to death. We hacked it to pieces. We carved it up. We gutted it. We gelded it. We reassembled it until it's a Frankenstein monster. But it was inspired by a true story. So I don't know what they what part of the movie was true and what wasn't. What is true, his name was Frank W. Abagnale. What is true is there was an FBI agent who tracked him down. What is true is that he impersonated all these people. So I looked the guy up. Now, get a load of this. His rare blend of knowledge and expert. Now, you know what the guy's doing now? The guy got busted when he was 21, finally, by the FBI. And the cop that busted him, the agent that busted him, worked out a deal that he'd be released from prison if he would work with the FBI identifying fraud, forgery, etc., because he had such a knack for it. And he said yes. And so today, 26 years later, he still works as a consultant for the FBI. He's one of the world's foremost authorities on fraud, forgery, etc. And it says here, he's got a website. It says here, his rare blend of knowledge and expertise began as a teenager. More than 35 years ago, he was known as one of the world's most famous confidence men, as depicted in his best-selling book, Catch Me If You Can. He cashed $2.5 million in fraudulent checks in every state and 26 foreign countries over a five-year period. Now, do you know what $2.5 million was back in 1964? Between the ages of 16 and 21, he successfully posed as an airline pilot, an attorney, a college professor, and a pediatrician. Apprehended by the French police when he was 21 years old, he served his time in the French, Swedish, and U.S. prison systems. After 5 years, he was released on the condition that he would help the federal government without remuneration by teaching and assisting federal law enforcement agencies. Well, anyway, this guy, it started in the movie tells you it started when he was in high school. He got into class. He was nervous. He was wearing his blazer from the private school that he went to. The kids were giving him crap. So he walks into the classroom, and what do you think he does? Here's these two bullies are there, too, that just already ran into him in the hallway. He walks into the classroom. He takes a piece of chalk, and he says, "My name is Mr. Brewer." Now then, and the kids all fall into their seats, and these two guys that bullied him are now, oh, Jesus. He says, "You, what's your name?" "Charlie, get up here and read chapter 4. Now, can anybody tell me where we left the..." And from that point forward, the guy's full of crap for the next 5 years. He's taking checks. He's getting those model Pan Am airplanes. You know the little model planes you used to get? He soaks them in a bathtub. And the little Pan Am insignia on the tail of the jet, he would take off that little decal, put it onto the check so it looked like a Pan Am payroll check, and got banks all over New York City to cash these payroll checks. He found out where Pan Am had their uniforms made. He got a Pan Am co-pilot uniform made up, bullcrapped his way into the cockpit, sat down. You know, these guys, "Hey, where are you deadheading to?" That's bullcrap. He picked up all this baloney. Just listen to this. And then he was in a hospital where he was a doctor, and, man, you got to see this flick. It's fantastic. I'm so glad I didn't see Gangs of New York, which, by the way, according to the fat kid that runs that movie theater, sucked. I love it when a movie manager will just tell you that. I said, "What's wrong with it?" Leonardo DiCaprio, for starters. But this guy DiCaprio is pretty good in this movie. This is a great movie for him. And Tom Hanks plays this FBI agent, and he's very understated, very much in the background, real, just beautiful, good performance. Martin Sheen is in this thing as some Southern lawyer. Who else is in it? I forget. Oh, Jennifer Garner plays a hooker. The one from what is that flick, Alias, that TV show? She plays a hooker in this thing. I guess that's all I wanted to say about that. She plays a hooker. I guess there was more I wanted to say, but there's nothing really more I wanted to add to that. Jennifer Garner as the hooker. All right, so that's it. I recommend that. That's on my list. That's the only movie I recommend this year. The whole year, that's the only one I'd recommend. All the other ones I saw stunk. Okay, this is the Phil Henry Show. That's our movie review. We'll be right back.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Vagisil for the mind.
And now more on the Phil Henry Show.
Listen to this. This guy, this Frank Abagnale, he's 16. He runs away from home. So he goes into a bank. He's got $100. He opens up a checking account, which was all he had. And the contention that the bank would then print him checks, and so he had this phony identification that he could go out and pass these checks. That's what he thought he would do. So he walks in and he opens the account. He opens up a $100 checking account. Now, when the new accounts person comes back, they say, here are your temporary checks, and we'll be mailing you your printed checks in about 10 days. And he, because he was young and he was inquisitive, he said, well, what about the deposit slips? And the lady said, no, they come from the check print. They'll be with your checkbook. But in the meantime, if you need to make a deposit, you can go over to the table in the lobby of the bank and get these bank deposit slips, write your account number in, and just use that number until you get your printed ones. Right? All right. So he walks over, takes a big stack of these deposit slips. He gets back to his hotel. He's looking at these deposit slips. And he says, I wonder if I got some magnetic ink. You know, the ink that the banks use to encode numbers on accounts and account numbers and checks, and encode his account number that the bank had assigned him onto these deposit slips. So he encodes his number on these deposit slips, takes them back to the bank, drops the deposit slips back into the tray, and for weeks people are depositing their checks into his account. And the guy said, how much money did you make? 40 G's. 40 G's! You got to look at this movie. It's great. And this guy, the way he got onto these Pan Am flights, he called the Pan Am corporate headquarters. He asked to speak to somebody in purchasing. And they come on the line, and he said that he was a Pan Am pilot, that he'd flown into New York the night before, and he'd sent his uniform out to be dry cleaned. But now the dry cleaner in the hotel said they couldn't find it, and that he had a flight in a few hours, and he didn't have a uniform. So they said, no problem. You want to, you know, what about a spare uniform? He said, yeah, back home where I'm based in San Francisco, but I don't have it with me. So he said, well, you understand this would cost you, not the company, the price of the new uniform. He said, yeah, no problem. So he goes down to the well-built uniform company on Fifth Avenue. They fit him for this uniform. And from then on out, he's what they call deadheading, which means you walk up, if you're an airline pilot, you can walk up to any airline counter, I guess, back then. I don't know how it works. And say, you know, have you got a jump seat available? And say, yeah, are you deadheading? And the trade-off is, if you're needed for duties on the plane, then you fulfill those duties, I guess, whatever the hell it is. This is what this guy did. He flew all over the world. And the way he got the badge, the identity badge, was the same thing. He had like 50 of these Pan Am little plastic planes floating in a tub, and he'd peel off the little Pan Am insignia and stick it on little phony badges that he made. And he'd just walk right through. It's really something else, man. Story's really interesting. You gotta check it out. It's about a guy full of crap, which is, it's kind of the reason why I dig that show. I like anybody who lies for a living. This is the Phil Hendry Show. We lie for a living. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. We have the top news stories of the year that we're going to be doing tomorrow. And when I say the top news stories, we're going to be doing a Phil Hendry Show style. We'll be repeating back snippets of conversation and interviews we've had with different guests over the last year, looking at the big news stories. The Luke Helder pipe bomb situation, the Andrea Yates trial, the Robert Blake trial, obviously the D.C. sniper situation, and of course the Chandra Levy. They finally found Chandra Levy. All of those stories and more coming up tomorrow, and it'll be a full 3 hours of the top news stories of the three of the year for those 3 hours. And all of it will be, you know, told through the mouths of the guests that we've had on over the last year. Then they have, on ABC.com, it's a marred year in La La Land. I don't know why they say Eminem, the rise of the actor, is such a bad thing. Reality TV shows hit new lows. It's not that I never heard the F word before. It's just that I'd never heard it used as a verb, noun, an adjective. Who wrote this? Predictable breakups, Americans idolize American Idol, Jacko's still wacko. Eh, crap. At the end of every year, people come out with lists of things. Best, worst, loudest, funkiest, smelliest. You know, one of these days we're going to have the worst talk shows in America list. If I can be assured that I'll have my job when I walk in the next day, if I can be assured that I can walk and walk in here and sit down in this seat, we will do. We used to do a thing when we were on locally in Los Angeles on KFI, and it was a monthly show called Who Sucks on KFI. And I was told to stop doing the show. I was told that I couldn't do it anymore because it was insulting certain hosts. Now, I was up for grabs, too. Now, the host that it was insulting the most finally got together some of her friends, and they started voting for me one night. I remember I was, like, coming in second. I was pretty close. But she still won. Even with all of her friends voting, she still won. But I was looking at this. I was, because we had it on the website too. You could vote on the website or vote by phone. And there I was, man. I was like, I was, you know, in a big race for first on that night. But one of these years we will be able to do that without. I work for a very big company that employs a lot of very important people, and many of them have been in the news in bad ways. And I got to tell you something. I got four kids, and I got a wife. She expects me to come home with that paycheck. You know, this show has never been about boldly stating things that no one has stated before. It's about doing a show that nobody's done before. It's about doing this show that nobody's ever done before or ever will be able to do. But it ain't about making big, bold, brash statements because I need this gig. Well, I actually don't. The truth be told, I got plenty of money in the bank. Tons. Thanks to my wife. But all I got to do is hold on to this gig for the next, say, 10 years, because it helps with my mental sanity. And then, boom, I'm gone. You know, I'm in Hawaii. But I gotta come to work because I dig the work too much. Right? And I need this every day. I need to come in and do my show every day. So if I start mouthing off about stuff that I should be mouthing off about, I'm only going to get myself fired. Who needs that? Who needs that? Talk radio isn't about making big, bold declarations. It's just about, you know, the illusion of big, bold declarations. And that I can do. I can bullcrap with the best of them. But one of these days, if I know I won't get canned, we'll do the worst talk shows of the year 19, whatever that, 2002, 2003. But right now, I really can't mention Mike Reagan. I'm kidding, Mike. You know that I am. You know that I am. You know that I am. And with that, as far as I'm concerned, this was the worst thing that happened this year. Not the Clash, but the passing of one of the members of the Clash is what I mean. I just forget his name.
London calling to the faraway town. Now war is declared and battle come down.
Joe Strummer, I know.
London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard. Your boys and girls.
Kidding.
London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing. Except for the rain and the crunch of things. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going in. Engines stop running, but I have no fear. Cause London is down and I to the imitation zone. Forget it, brother, you can go it alone. London calling to the zombies of death. Quit holding out and draw another breath. London calling, and I don't want to shout, but while we were talking I saw you nodding out. London calling, see we ain't got no hide, except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The acid, the sun's zooming in, engines stop running, the wheat is going thick, a nuclear error, but I have no fear, cause London is drowning, and I live by the river. Just holidays. I was there too, and you know what they said? Well, some of it was true. London calling at the top of the dial, and after all this, won't you give me a smile?
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Kittens are tasty.